It's fine. So the reading is from Matthew 14, verses 22 to 33, which is on page 981 of your blue Bibles. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up onto a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it's I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Thanks be to God.
So I hope you're going to be gentle with me. Okay, let me open up with a very firm statement. I believe in miracles. I hope you do too. Because if you don't, I have to ask why you're here. Because every day in my life is a miracle. Every morning I wake up and I think, I've been given another day. Sometimes I wonder why. But I have. And I'm just so pleased to be able to serve God in some way or another. Pat and I have seen several miracles during our years as believers. At one desperate time in our lives, almost every day saw a new miracle, a miracle of provision, or in some other way. We used to have one of those war mottos. I'm sure some of you have got sort of particular sayings that have real meaning to you. We had one that said, "We don't believe in miracles. In this house, we rely on them." And that was true. So a question, do you believe in miracles? What did you pray for just now? Don't answer me. Did you pray for a miracle? How many prayed for a miracle? Yes, a few. I'm sure there's a lot more than that that really need a miracle and don't know why. So what is a miracle? It was interesting at the beginning. When I saw Joy's notes come through for the week, I thought, oh no, she's doing the sermon. Because she put something on there about asking a question, what is a miracle? And I've got written down here, what is a miracle? So I'll ask you a question. I'm going to do it anyway. What is a miracle? Any answers? I've got some written down. Oh, I wonder where you got that from. Where did you get that from, Joy? Oh, interestingly enough, while we were praying, the word miracles popped in my head and God gave me some different words. So I was asking for a pen and nobody had a pen, so I got my phone out. I don't normally get my phone out when I'm in church, but I typed these in, miracles. Magnificent, intervening, redeeming, amazing Christ loves every soul. That's pretty good, isn't that? Not bad for an old man. Okay, Simon, yep. We're up there. So can we have the first slide? No, the second one. That's the first one. Yeah. Yeah, we'll come in a minute. We'll just wait.
We love you, Simon.
Yes, I'll just put that up there just for a show. We'll get there in a minute. Okay, so what is a miracle? A miracle, in my idea, is a supernatural action. Something that is extraordinary, something that is beyond belief even, something that is even beyond explanation. Certainly something that's not normal, not run-of-the-mill day-to-day actions. So are you up for a little quiz? Okay. Apologies for the sort of different colours on there. My computer ran out of ink. Okay, the first question is, only one miracle is recorded in all four Gospels. Any ideas which one that is? That's pretty good. Any other suggestions? Are we all going for that one? All right, we'll have a look in the answers in a minute. How many miracles of Jesus are recorded in the four Gospels? That's perhaps a little bit more difficult. A few more? No, I'll tell you in a minute. Some commentators refer to three types of healing miracles. Can you name them? No, not the commentators. Three types of healing miracles. Sorry? Physical, yeah. Curing. Spiritual. Yeah, all right. That's pretty good, actually. It's not the three I've got down, but that's pretty good. Okay, what was the first miracle? Yes. Any idea what that is? That's a grapevine. I planted that in my garden 4 years ago, and it died. I planted two of them, and they both died. And then the second year, I got a little bit, a little tiny bit like that come up, and then that died. And then the other one didn't come up at all. This year, this one's probably, I don't know, maybe 12 foot long now. And guess what? Got some grapes coming on it. One day I might get wine. But you need an awful lot of grapes for that. And you need to be very patient. And you need to be pretty kind to the plants as well to get it. Okay, I'll leave that there as a reminder. Can we have the next slide, Simon, if it's going to come up? And we'll have the answers. If you want to talk amongst yourself while we're waiting for the computer to catch up. Have you met my kids? Is it working, Simon, or are we having trouble with the computer? It's the heat. Okay, so one miracle is recorded in all four Gospels. That was right. Margie was right.
Yes, Margie.
Yes? No, that's too far. Right. Feeding of the 5,000. There are 37 miracles recorded in the four Gospels. Three types of healing ministry are cures, ailments healed, exorcism, demons cast out, and resurrection. And the first miracle was water into wine. I don't know where that's disappeared altogether. Never mind. These things don't always work out. Turning the water into wine was the first. So which miracle involving Jesus do you consider to be the most important? Resurrection? Any other ideas, suggestions? No? You're very quiet this morning. Well, my answer to that was, but yes, they're all prime candidates, but you've only said one, so yes, it's a prime candidate. And it certainly shows the wonderful, magnificent power and majesty of God. But let's just say, I personally think that the greatest miracle of all of Jesus is his birth. Because without it, none of the others could have taken place. So it's a very important thing to remember. So even today, his birth is a matter of great debate. There are several atheistic authors who have attempted to write him out of history. There's one famous guy who wrote a book. The idea was to denounce the whole Christian faith. And he ended up, by the end of it, becoming a Christian. And it became one of the best sellers in the Christian circles. That's a miracle. A friend of mine worked as a missionary to the Arab states for many years. As you can appreciate, his work was often undercover. He would tell of times when he thought he was in danger, as Arabs of all ages would approach him in the street and ask for copies of the Injil, the New Testament. Something they wouldn't normally do. This happened so many times, and often they would say that Jesus came to them in a vision, in their dreams, and told them to seek him out. Even told them the colour of his bike that he was riding. That's a miracle. Some of you may know that I came to faith through a vision, and that's written about in a book. I went to my library yesterday morning and picked it up. And that's the book. And my journey into faith is written in there. Jeff was a vicar of a church in Dorset where I served a year as an unpaid evangelist. I was really the unpaid curate. I did all the dirty jobs, which is quite good fun, really. And I used to go around and visit people and share faith with them. And it was really wonderful. There was amazing the opportunities I got to tell people about Jesus. In one house, I may have told you this before, but I struggled in the church that I was going in on a regular basis with things of a miraculous nature because it just wasn't talked about. They didn't talk about the working of the Holy Spirit or the working of the enemy. And I went to this one house in this village in Dorset, and the lady said to me, "Well, if your Jesus can do anything about this, then I might believe." And she flung open the door, and the sideboard moved from one room to the other in the hallway, about 6 inches off the floor. I'd never seen or heard of anything like that in my life. And I said, "Well, Jesus can deal with that." She said, "Go ahead." And I prayed. And I just asked the Lord to cleanse the house and for his power and majesty and might to come in and for the family to believe in Jesus. And bang, there was a loud crash and the sideboard dropped to the floor. I don't know how many things inside were smashed, but quite a few were. But I had to go in and help her move the furniture back into the right room. The following Sunday, her husband, her mother, her father, her aunts and uncles and children and nieces and nephews, about 30 of them, all came to church and all came to faith, all because of something I didn't know or understand, but I had the power, that I had the thought in my mind that God can do anything. Thank God I was a new Christian. Because I wouldn't have been able to do that, I don't think, if I was now, because so much gets pumped out of you over the years. The vision that I had that I came to faith was dramatized and put into a video production. I'm sorry, I'm going to call it Miracles. That's me on the side and on the front. Anybody remember St. Andrew's Bookshop? I was in St. Andrew's Bookshop one day, and this woman was giving me a really funny look. And then she had the courage to come up to me, and she said, "Excuse me, are you famous?" And I said, "Yes, I am. I'm a prince." "Are you really?" "Yes." And I said, "And I'm an ambassador." "Are you really?" I said, "Yes, I'm a high-ranking diplomat in the kingdom of heaven." She said, "Are you really?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, where do I know you from? What have I seen you on?" And I said to her, "Can you see that bookshelf over there where the videos are?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Have a look at the cover. You were just looking at it just now." She said, "Oh, yes! That's you, isn't it? Oh, I must buy a copy." And she went and bought a copy. Well, that came about because of me being asked to go to Amsterdam as a result of the book called Miracles. And I went to Amsterdam to film a television program for Evangelism OMROP, which is a national channel paid for by the state in Holland that's beamed to both Holland and Belgium and a few other places via satellite. And I was asked to take part in this discussion program about visions. And it was really interesting because I'd never been to Amsterdam before. Can't say I really wanted to go, to be honest, but I went and I arrived and I was supposed to be met by the producer at the airport. And there was nobody there. And I was wandering around the arrivals lounge wondering, well, where do I go? What do I do? And then there was a little miracle happened there. This woman, middle-aged with blonde hair, came tearing towards me with her arms flung out, flung them round me and said, Father says it's all going to be okay. And then she was gone and flashed off to someone else and did the same thing. And I thought, well, that's really odd. And then I saw a rather minuscule lady, little lady, standing there with a sign that said, Bob Morant. So that was the producer waiting for me, not the one who flung her arms around me, the other one. So I had a wonderful opportunity to talk about faith and what faith means and how the vision changed my life and how it could change other people's lives. Had a few letters about that afterwards, which was quite interesting. Let's just get back to our passage. This is the miracle of Jesus walking on water. It's recorded in 3 of the 4 Gospels. Comes on the heels of his miraculous feeding of the 5,000 with 5 loaves and bread and 2 fishes. But it was a miracle of Jesus walking on the water more than any other, really, that convinced the disciples that he was indeed the Son of God. In fact, they say, truly, you are the Son of God. What a statement. What a powerful declaration. The story unfolds at the Sea of Galilee. I don't know if you know anything about the Sea of Galilee, but it's in the lower portion of the Jordan Valley in a mountain range. It's 4,000 feet above sea level. The lake itself is 700 foot below the Mediterranean Sea. Don't know quite how that works out, but that's what it says. As a result of that, it gets a lot of extremely violent storms. It can be calm, and then all of a sudden, a storm will come. Years ago, when we lived in Bournemouth, I used to go out and marshal yacht races in Poole Harbour. And Poole Harbour was a bit like that. You could be sitting there in a teacup with nothing stirring. And then all of a sudden, a gust would blow up and yachts would turn over and we'd have to rush out to them and try and save them before they drowned. I didn't lose anybody, might add. The storms in the Sea of Galilee are caused by cold air rushing down from the mountains, surrounding it and colliding with the warm, moist air rising off the surface of the water itself. The miracle actually tells us how we should approach our daily lives if we truly believe in the Christ of the scriptures. Peter said, if it's really you, let me come down to you. And he got out of the boat, he walked towards Jesus, but he took his eyes off Jesus. He saw the wind and the waves around him, and he started to sink. Jesus had to reach out and pull him out. And that's what it's like for us sometimes, isn't it? We know what we know. And we know that nothing is impossible for Jesus. Nothing is impossible for God. But every now and again, the enemy gets in and we forget that. And we start to falter and we start to sink. And we have to reach out. And the only one we can reach out to is Jesus. So in the storms of life, we must seek the Lord and look to him for our rescue. Just the other day, I heard of an American TV evangelist who's decided God has told him that he needs a new miracle. Do you know what the new miracle is? He needs his own jet plane. $54 million it's going to cost. And he made an appeal and told people on the TV that if they didn't help him, they were disobeying God. How awful is that? Almost daily, I get letters through the post telling me of the importance of me gifting a particular person or organisation, and that if I don't, I'm letting God down. That's wrong. That's not the way Christians should do business. We live in a world where we have to be totally honest with the people around us, that the God that we know is a God of miracles. He is Jehovah Jireh. He is God the provider. So where is Jesus seen in those things, in those letters and those TV programs? That's not the reliance that they should have as God, as a miracle maker. I told you at the beginning that there were times in our lives when we were new Christians where, well, we're still quite new Christians. It's only been 29 years, so we're still learning. I often say when I'm preaching that I'm a practicing Christian. One day I will be perfect, but I won't be here anymore. It'll be too late. I would have gone. I would have learned all I needed to know, so my practice would be over. So I said earlier on about that some of the things that have happened in our lives. One day, we hadn't been Christians very long, just a few months, wasn't it, Pat, when we had to close our business down. And we were living on the leftovers in the freezer. And gradually they wore out and there was nothing left in the freezer. And we were praying over an egg, which was clearly rotten, because it was shaking hard in the shell. You could hear it. A loaf of bread that was covered in green mold. A potato with roots in it. And an OXO cube. And that was all we had left in our cupboard. We had three young children. And we said to the kids, let's pray. And let's ask God's blessing on this. And we'll turn it into something. Because we'd read about Jesus feeding the 5,000. So it was possible God could intervene. And we prayed and the doorbell rang. And we were in the habit in those days of not stopping our prayer for the doorbell or the telephone. That's changed, I'm afraid, over the years. But we let it ring and we ignored it. When we'd finished praying, I said to Pat, I'll go and see if there's still somebody at the door. And so I walked down the stairs because we lived in a flat above the business. We were still allowed to stay there for a while. I walked downstairs and I opened the front door. And on the front doorstep was this enormous cardboard box. And it was full up with food. There was cornflakes, there was bread, there was cakes, there was biscuits, there was Nescafe. We've never had Nescafe coffee at that point in our lives. We'd never had Kellogg's cornflakes in our lives. There was all sorts of things you could imagine. There was sweets for the kids. There was even a bottle of sherry and a bottle of wine and a few other bits and pieces. And it was an enormous box, and I couldn't lift it up off the ground. And believe me, I used to carry carcasses of meat, half cows and things, into the shop without any difficulty. I couldn't lift this box up. It was so heavy. And anyway, we got the things upstairs, and we thank God he answered our prayer. When we eventually moved out of that house and we moved into a house in Reading, we had a visitor turn up one day. We were really struggling at the time. We'd had to do a house exchange. And the people that got the house we were in got a solid brick-built building with new windows, new electrics, new plumbing. Everything was new in there. We moved into a house where the roof tiles were falling off. And because we did a council house exchange, the council wouldn't repair it. That was Reading Borough Council's own rules. So we had to do all our own repairs. So we moved in and the kitchen was crawling with all sorts of weird and wonderful things. And we managed to replace things over time with the help of different people. And one day we had this terrible smell and we figured out it was urine. And the people whose kids had lived there had just weed everywhere, all over the carpets, over the floors, wherever. It didn't matter. They just did it. So we needed new carpets, but we had no money. And this friend from Bournemouth came to visit. And he bought a bunch of roses, 30 red roses. Isn't that wonderful? And he stayed with us. He said, no, don't worry about the roses. Do them when I've gone. I've only got an hour or so. And he stayed with us and he prayed. And then he went. And Pat said, oh, I better go. Put the roses in water. And she opened up the roses. And around each stem was a £10 note. The next day we got our carpets replaced. That boat was a long way from the shore. They had been rowing for hours. They were exhausted. They thought he was a ghost, says in Mark's account. They must have thought that this could be the end for them. But Jesus came at exactly the right moment. His timing is perfect. Are you waiting for your miracle? Are you getting tired, exhausted with the pressures you feel under? Have you reached the end of your tether? Then maybe you need to let go and let God. In this act of walking to them on the water in a storm, Jesus showed them that the thing they feared most, the sea, the tempest, was merely a set of steps for him to come to them. Through this miracle, we should learn that no matter what the difficult life experiences we go through, whether illness, loss of loved one, financial hardships, these can bring Jesus closer to us. The disciples thought they were seeing a ghost because they were not looking for him. They weren't expecting him to come out on the water. They jumped to conclusions because their minds were clouded by fear and not by faith. Fear and faith cannot reside in the same heart. It is fear that blinds the eyes to the presence of the Lord. It is fear that stops us seeing miracles. It is fear that keeps us getting closer and closer to the perfection we should have as Christians walking daily with him. When people see that there isn't fear in our lives, they will believe that our God is real. From this story comes what I consider to be the most significant statements made by human beings ever in our history. As the winds died down at his commands, the disciples realized who Jesus really was. Truly, you are the Son of God. Do you recognize truly who Jesus is? If you don't, then can I appeal to you to look again at your heart and see Jesus for who he really is and turn your face towards him today? I can promise you that your life will never be the same again. I can't promise you that you will get rich. I can't promise you that he'll heal you from whatever illness you have, except on the final day. And then you will be totally and truly healed. Your outlook on life will change. Everything about you will change. As a miracle of rebirth takes hold of your life, you will truly be an ambassador of Christ here on earth. Have you heard the story of the starfish? With this I will close. A man was strolling on a sandy beach. He was aghast to see thousands of starfish washed up by the storm the previous night on the shore. A little ahead of him, he saw a man carefully pick up individual starfish and look closely at them. And if they were still alive, he would put them back in the water. This other man went up to him and said, "Why bother? There are so many. Throwing a few back will not make a difference." The other man, holding another starfish gently in his hand, said, "You are so wrong, friend. It will make a difference to this one. Whatever you do in the name of Jesus, however small it is a miracle in someone's life. And that miracle could be the difference between everlasting life for them or everlasting separation from God. Go forth and tell, O Church of God, awake." May God richly bless you in your service of him in this week ahead. Amen.